Hey folks, Sam Jones here. Welcome to another edition of Off Camera, the show where I get to talk to iconic, creative, curious artists and find out how they got that way. And in this episode, I sit down with improv artist and actress Lauren Lapkus. I'm sitting here in a studio right now with a microphone, my own podcast, and the freedom to say just about anything I want. But I probably won't. My self-imposed filters just won't budge, which probably explains my obsession with improv artists like Lauren Lapkus. She can inhabit the grossest, most insanely hilarious characters and walk them onto a stage with no idea what will happen next, and no real regard for the consequences. I wasn't surprised to hear that Lauren auditioned for every single one of her high school plays. I was pretty shocked to learn that she didn't make a single one. Thank God a sharp-eyed teacher suggested improv Olympic classes. Now Lauren plays at the highest levels of the art, appearing in her own Netflix comedy special, touring in live shows, and hosting one of the most amazing improv podcasts I've ever heard. She's also made the leap to blockbuster films like Jurassic World and the upcoming Holmes and Watson with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. As we talked about her career, the stories behind her funniest characters, and how she manages to stay so free and open as an artist, I finally lost it. There can be no other explanation for my sudden decision to turn the interview over to a former corrections officer and champion bird caller. Yeah, things are getting weird here around Off Camera. So pull up a chair and listen in. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Sam.
I like your cat.
Thank you. There's been debate over whether it's a fox or a cat.
Well, is it a new...
No, this is something I've had since I was 5 years old. It's been carried around my entire life.
Really?
I think it was my mom's, actually, like in the 80s, and then I just adopted it.
Does it go everywhere with you?
It does go everywhere, and I just think it's so weird and fun that I love wearing it.
Is this like your version of a stuffed animal?
I have real ones, too.
Do you really?
I love stuffed animals.
My daughter has a pink elephant that she brings everywhere,
yeah.
And there's been multiple times where panic has ensued because we can't find Pinky.
Oh, yeah. That's rough. I had a couple things like that when I was little. I had a blankie, and I also had a little cat stuffed animal. But yeah, I lost it once, and it was devastating, and we found it right outside my house days later. But
really?
It was a huge triumph, yeah.
Well, we met on the set of Holmes and Watson in London.
Yeah.
And it was quite intimidating because you sort of were in character while we worked together, and you played sort of a creepy, weird, knife-wielding...
Yeah, my character is very... I don't know how much I'm actually allowed to say, but she's very not there. She's
right.
Not really present.
And that was weird.
Yeah, and so in all the photos, we're supposed to be in character in the photos, and so
yeah.
It's just, I'm just very blank. And
yes.
Yeah.
I was a little worried when you came here that... You would bring her with you.
No, she's long gone. Plus, I had to wear like corsets and like that whole stuffy outfit, and so it kind of just makes it uncomfortable. It's hard to just have a nice casual conversation
yeah,
when you're like
exactly
shuffling around a room, can't breathe.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of amazing because that film was a big film.
Yeah.
It's Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, and it's a big send-up of Sherlock Holmes. And when I thought about that, and also that you did Jurassic World, and I thought, God, like, do you have a hard time squaring that version of your life with doing improv at a 50-seat theater? When are you more nervous? Right before you go on stage to do improv or right before a situation like that?
I think before a situation like that. With improv now, I don't get nervous anymore. It's
you
just
don't.
No, yeah. I've been doing it now for like almost like 13 years or 14 years. And I think after doing so many shows, you just become like... It just becomes like a normal part of my day now. So I don't think about it as even performing in some way. Like it's just kind of like, oh, I'm going to go out there and do that. And
then, really?
Yeah. So going on like a big set with like, you know, all the amazing, I mean, just even just like the background actors moving around and making the thing feel very real, especially on Holmes and Watson. It was so cool because they were in London shooting in like, you know, real area, like real places like the Tower of London and cool things like that. And so, and they have like every extras and amazing costumes, like period piece costumes. And I'm so impressed by that, like just watching everything move around me.
Right.
But that's intimidating more, just to see like the production itself, like the scale of everything is.
Yeah. What's the aspect of that that kind of brings up the most anxiety?
I think not wanting to mess up and forget my lines and stuff. I think that's one nice thing about improv is you never have lines, so you can't really mess up.
Yeah.
So I think I've gotten really comfortable with that. And then whenever I have to actually talk, I'm like, okay, I really want to get this right and not mess it up.
Did you have to sort of, was that a skill you had to learn late because you started in improv?
memorizing was always intimidating for me. I think, like, growing up, I did children's theater and stuff like that, and the memorizing would stress me out so much, and I'd be really afraid that I would forget my lines. So once I started doing improv, then you're afraid for different reasons, because you're like, I'm going to say something dumb or not funny, and then everyone will hate it, and that's on me, because no one else wrote it.
Well, when you started improv in those first years, was it a situation where you had to sort of get over a hump of that, of those nerves?
Yeah, definitely. I started improv when I was a senior in high school, when I was taking adult classes at Improv Olympic in Chicago. And for me, the really scary thing was feeling like I was boring compared to the adults, because I was, like, in high school, and I'm like, I don't have life experience, and I don't have anything to draw from, and, like, they're not going to want to hear about homework or things. So, like, in between, it was most about, like, the social anxiety of it, like, having to talk to these people and, like, and be able to make conversation. That would stress me out. So I remember, like, in the breaks in class, I would just read a book. Like, I just didn't want to talk to anyone, and I was, like, I was intimidated.
I wonder if they were intimidated, too, in that they're adults and you seem like a kid, and they're like, what if I say the wrong thing and I'm creepy?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm sure that was there too. And I mean, I remember, like, coming back from a week off. I had missed class one weekend because I had to go to prom. And I brought in my, like,
as
my
one
prom
does
pictures.
When you're in high school.
Yeah, I brought in my prom photos and showed everyone. And, like, that was really fun. And then over time, they became, like, my friends. Once I was in college, I hung out with all those people the whole time. So it ended up being people that I knew for years and years. But
when you were there and you were intimidated and reading books and all that stuff, did you think this, like, did you still know it was for you and that you wanted, how did you know?
I knew because it was the only place where I ever really felt confident. Like, once I was on stage and, like, doing, I almost feel like I'm going to cry. It's such a weird.
Really?
Yeah, because I never really thought about it. But I think it did make me feel like I had such a sense of confidence from doing improv and feeling like I had a voice. And, you know, I would audition for plays at school and never get in. So it was a way for me to do something that was on my own terms, and a way for me to use my humor in a positive way and kind of hone it. Because I think so much of what I was doing before as I was growing up was, like, class clown, you know, being sarcastic, making funny remarks to the teacher and whatever. And I loved being like that. But then, you know, over time, you kind of were like, what am I going to do with that? How do I make that into something? I want to, like, act and do characters. Like, I knew I wanted to do that, but I didn't know how. So it really shaped that path for me.
When you were that class clown person, because I have a little history of class clown-ish.
Yeah.
And I often look back and I think, what was that for me? Like, and I know I was sort of compensating for feeling, you know, like a little scrawny kid that no one liked by going over the top, which, and drawing more attention to myself.
I did that too, though.
Which
I think it's
no
really
sense.
Normal. Yeah, but it is weird because it seems like it doesn't make sense, but I think it does because you're just trying to feel good in some way. And, like, if you have low self-esteem or whatever and people are laughing when you say something, it's like, hey, I'm pretty smart, I'm pretty funny, I'm cool. Like,
like just
me.
Standing there wouldn't be enough.
Yeah.
Like, just being yourself wouldn't be enough.
No, yeah, and I definitely felt that way in high school. I really wanted to grow up and just be an adult because I thought that would mean I would have it all figured out or something. So,
yeah,
which is not true, but.
Were you tall early?
Yeah.
You're tall, right?
Yeah.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'10".
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was 5'10 in high school.
You were?
Yeah, so by my sophomore year, I was 5'8". And then you're just towering over people, and it is.
So did you just feel awkward?
Yeah, and I would just, like, slump down. I remember, actually, improv was a way for me to learn how to move in my body more confidently. I remember having a teacher, Susan Messing, who's an amazing improv teacher. We did an exercise where we would walk around naturally, but then she was like, now start to feel how your body is moving and what you're leading with. And, like, she pointed out that I led with my pelvis because I was trying to make myself shorter. And so then once I kind of realized I was doing that, I was like, oh, I can adjust that a little bit. And I still work on it, but it really taught me that I was, like, slouching and I could look better. And
I'm curious what traits you had even back then that you recognize, and now it makes total sense that you're here. Because I think improv is sort of a specific thing, too. I mean, did it start out with just, I want to act, and then
I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. That was, like, my dream. And so watching that show, I think, was so influential to me. And that was the kind of, I would come to school and, like, imitate those characters. And
really?
That, and doing imitations was how I started really figuring out, like, what kind of comedy I liked. And I loved SNL so much.
Were you savvy enough as a kid watching Saturday Night Live to think, oh, that could be a career path for me?
Yeah, and my parents loved Second City. Like, before they had kids, they would go there all the time. They lived in Old Town and would go just watch all the, you know, all the new shows every time they'd come out. So that was something that I knew about, but I had never really seen. And then watching SNL and reading about it, I could learn, like, oh, that Chris Farley did I.O. and Second City, and then he got SNL. And so there is some, like, logic to that path. But thinking about, I mean, I didn't even, like, realize that, like, people in commercials were actors until I was, like, way older. Like, I didn't, like, think about the fact that someone auditioned for that and then did that. So I never really considered another path. It was more just, like, I want to be on SNL.
Wow.
Yeah. And, I mean, even just doing improv, it wasn't really about the end goal, but it was like, oh, this will fill that desire to, like, perform and be funny. And then realizing, like, oh, it does lead to that for people. It's cool.
Right. What was the key sort of that you discover where you're like, oh, now I fit? Like, do you remember a certain teaching or a certain, like, moment where you go, oh, yeah, I get this. Like, it fits with me.
Yeah, I think just being in the classes and having the, like, pushing myself every week. I was nervous to go every week. And, like, I was afraid of what was going to happen and, like, how it would go. I would take the train from Evanston into Chicago and have, like, that hour of getting there where I'd just be, like, really nervous. And I think at a certain point when that fell away, it felt like it was like, right. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I think I was pushing myself to go because I knew it was good. And I always had fun, but I was always kind of stressed about it. And then at a certain point, I was just, like, excited to go. And it stopped becoming, like, a fear on any level. And that, I don't know exactly what took it away, but I think just time and doing it a bunch.
Right.
So much of doing improv is, like, and getting good at it is doing it so much that you can't think about it anymore and you can't analyze every stupid thing you said and, like, live in your brain about it. I think that it's really easy when you're starting to, like, get obsessed with, like, things that you did in class and be like, that was so dumb. Oh, my God, no one's ever going to forget how dumb that was. Like, that wasn't funny and that was a failure and whatever. And if you don't keep doing it, you'll just kind of cycle through that over and over again. I think, like, I can't remember bad stuff I've done at this point because I don't care anymore. Like, I do bad
right.
stuff every time, and it's like, or something I wasn't happy with or whatever, and it could have gone better, but you just immediately let it go or you'll go crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that's the opposite of improv, right? If you're starting to put a filter up or think about it.
Yeah, and anytime you do, it's bad.
Right.
Like, anytime I've, like, gotten in my head and been like, what am I saying? I'm like, oh, now I've lost it completely. I have no idea what's going on.
Did you find that when you started doing that you had no choice but to be more revealing of who you were?
Yeah, and I think that was really good for me because I had so many walls that I kind of built up in myself of just self-consciousness or uncomfortability with who I was, like, not for any deep reason, more just like, I'm awkward, I'm growing up, I don't know what I'm doing or how to move or who I
right.
am. And, like, that helped me let go of so much of it because you just, in those moments when you're on stage, you can't be thinking about that stuff and you can't be like, what do I look like right now? And what do I, if you're doing that, you're not in the moment.
When I hear you say that, I think of meditation.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're supposed to empty your mind and not think about anything. And then you go, well, that's impossible.
Yeah. Oh, and I think it, for
to
me,
push
it is.
A thought. Yeah, so, but that's what it sounds like when you talk about improv. It sounds like, you know, how do you do the very thing that brains naturally do? How do you stop doing that?
It's the only time in my life that I can do that is
really?
Doing improv. I've tried to, like, meditate for 5 minutes or whatever, or I take, like, gentle yoga classes that are basically meditation, and I start to go insane because I'm like, this is taking so long. I'm thinking about everything in my
right.
life. And, like, I'm laying in this one position for 10 minutes and I can't take it. But it's really good for me to try to do that because in my life I am always thinking too much and overthinking things and thinking about something I said that was dumb. And, like,
you
I do,
do
it all the time. Oh, yeah. I'm still, like, reeling over stupid things I did, like, 5 years ago. Like, I'm just like, why did I say that to that person? Now they hate me now. For sure they hate me because I said that dumb thing.
Like, and, why, like, when you came in today and told our receptionist.
Well, yeah. I was like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
No, it's like, it's always something even dumber than that where it's like, it was a joke that I made that fell flat or something. And I'm like, oh, why did I say that to that person, I admire that person, and I just said something dumb to them, and now they're going to remember me as that person who said the dumb thing. But then on stage, in character, you know, I could say anything and there are no repercussions. It's great. It's like such a freedom.
Is that what it is? It's learning there's no repercussions?
Yeah, and it lets me just have no filter, and it's more fun to have no filter. And so if I can be in character and say whatever that character wants to say, and most of the time I don't even know what's about to come out of my mouth, it feels very free. It's really awesome.
Well, that's the fascinating thing about it. But I do think that as you get older, or if you don't practice it, it's something that, like, I think kids naturally are better at it than adults.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember taking class, when I was in the classes, there would be people who were just like lawyers who wanted to just get out of their head a little bit or shake it up. And it is very hard to do that when you're, if you're especially a, like someone like that, where like maybe creativity is not your strong suit, but you want to feel more confident speaking or whatever. Being silly on stage is going to be very hard from the like at the start. Like you're going to have a hard time shaking off all of the ways that you are in society every day. Like it's very weird to just go like boo boo like a bunch of adults and like it's embarrassing and weird and no one should want to do it, but then it's fun. Like it feels great. But yeah, I think watching kids, it's like so inspiring because you can see that like they just don't have a filter yet and like we haven't put that on them.
Yeah, why does the filter come, do you think?
I mean, I think it's just society's expectations of you. When you walk into a place, you have to say hello, how are you, do the small talk, do all the things, or you're going to be weird and it's going to go badly and the, you know, you will go off track in a way that's unexpected and everyone will feel weird. And right. So you're like, I don't want to make everyone feel weird, I want to come in and be normal and have a nice interaction with you. But isn't it more fun to just come in and just like immediately launch into like some more interesting conversation about your life that you wanted to talk about or something?
Right, but even if I think the thing that happens is if you do that, you make the other person uncomfortable.
Yes.
And then they resent you.
No, but then I find that I love when people do this. Like if I meet a person who would be perceived as like crazy by other people because like they come in and they're just talking and they're being outgoing and talking about whatever and they don't care if you care about it or not. I like am fascinated by those people and I want to talk to them. So I love it. I'm like, I want to be more like them. I want to like care less and right. have fun.
What percentage would you say of people who go to like the lawyer who takes the improv class or even someone who says this is, you know, I want to end up at Saturday Night Live or wherever, what percentage do you think actually can, you know, can do it on a level that's that they can play on the highest level?
That's such a hard question because I feel like it's insulting what I'm going to say.
Well, perfect.
But I think it's a really small percentage of people who do improv who can actually really succeed at it. I think it's so watered down right now. There are so many people doing improv who probably shouldn't keep doing it, who are not engaging to watch. And it sounds so mean, but it's like, there's just people who, when you're good at something, you should follow it. And maybe that's not for everyone, but everyone wants to do it because it's fun. Like there's just, it's such a popular thing right now. It's very trendy. That's kind of interesting to watch because when I was doing it, not that I'm like some old person or something, but like there just, no one I knew was doing it. So it was like a thing that I was doing that people were like, what's that? And so now to see it be like everyone and their mom literally is taking improv class and that's cool and it gets you out of your shell and it does something for you. But do you want to like spend thousands of dollars pursuing this and so many hours pursuing this thing that maybe isn't naturally for you? I don't know. I mean, I think I stopped doing everything in my life that I wasn't naturally good at. Yeah. So maybe that's just my personality where I'm like, if I'm not going to succeed at this, it feels bad to me to keep trying. Like I tried everything growing up, like every instrument, every dance class.
You did.
I did clarinet, I did violin, I did piano, I did ballet, I did tap classes. I tried swimming, wasn't good at that, stopped trying. Like, it's like everything that I could not be naturally good at, I was just like, I'm not going to do it. So when I see people doing something like that, I'm like, really, like, wow, you really want to keep doing this, even though it's not easy or good for you. Like, it's not a natural fit. I mean, that's inspiring on one level because I wish I had pushed myself with piano and I could play piano now. So maybe they'll be fucking amazing. I don't know. I can't tell you. But like, it is crazy to see like the thousands and thousands of people doing improv now where you're like, they just can't all be amazing. I mean, I don't want to tell people to quit if they enjoy it, but I'm also like, quit.
You should quit. Well, so when you watch improv and it's bad, does it sort of give you a little pause like, ooh, like, this doesn't work a lot?
I think watching a bad improv team is just going to happen on any given night. You're just going to see some bad improv when you go to improv. And that's why it's so hard to convince people to come to an improv show, because like it's going to be bad. Your instinct is that it's going to be bad. I want to tell you it's going to be amazing, but there's so much bad stuff. That's the problem with it being watered down, is that there's too much. There are so many amazing performers in LA that are like the funniest people I've ever seen in my life that you can see at any given night at these theaters. But then there's also performances that are not going to be good that are happening at, there's like a million indie theaters, a million, you know, it's all happening all the time. And where you end up, like if you have a person who's never seen an improv show and they wander into the wrong place at the wrong time, they're going to have a bad mentality about improv.
Right.
They're going to be like, oh, it sucks. And you're like, no, you didn't see the right show. There is so much good improv, but it's such a hard thing to convince people of because you can't film it and show them. It never works.
It doesn't work on film.
It just doesn't. And
isn't that funny?
I mean, yeah, it just does not translate. And like, so there's no way to prove it. If someone's kind of like already done by seeing a bad show, they're lost. They're lost.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, you want people to come to the right thing. But then I also get nervous when I have like friends that are new friends or something. They want to come see a show. I don't want them to come because I'm like, I can't guarantee it's going to be the best thing ever. And so I'm nervous that you're going to have this opinion of what I do that is not a true, you know, educated opinion.
Right.
Like, you need to see a bunch to, like, get a sense of what it really is.
Well, you know, obviously listening is the tenet of improv, right? Like, that's where you find all of your information. And
yeah.
I would guess that if you're really good at listening, that is the way to clean out the filters, right?
Yeah.
Because it's an active thing.
If you're paying attention, you can't have your own thoughts going. I mean, you've definitely been in conversations where, like, someone's talking and then you're like, I have no idea what they said.
Yes.
I was thinking about something else.
Yes.
Completely. And if you do that on stage, you're completely lost and you're messing them up too because they need
right.
you to say something that makes sense with what they just said. And so you have to pay attention. And that is what helps. I mean, it's what keeps you focused and like and in the moment so you can't get distracted and think about what you're going to eat for lunch the next day. Like, you just can't. That's like where the practice really comes in. And people can like kind of joke, like, why do you have an improv practice? Aren't you going to make it all up? And you need to do that stuff over and over again because working it out.
Give me an example of what a practice looks like.
Oh, yeah. An improv practice, you do exercises like warm-ups, like that kind of thing that you'll, like, the silly sort of noises and things that you might guess that happen in improv class are going to be happening.
Really?
Yeah, stupid stuff that gets you out of your head, though.
Like
sound and movement or like a pass the noise sort of thing. So, I mean, I feel like an idiot doing it, which is what's so fun about it for the cameras, is that you just be like, and then you'd like pass it to someone else, like, bleh. I mean, it is that simple and that dumb.
Really?
But you stop thinking during that game. And then you could do pattern games.
Right, but if you can't do that, you can't go on stage and, and lay yourself bare.
No, yeah, you have to be able to be silly and,
and
look dumb.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, doing pattern games, like exercises that kind of keep that memory stuff going are really important where you're basically doing like, I say this to you every time, then you say something else to that person. And so every time I say that word to you, you say your word to that person. And everyone's doing that. And so there's 10 patterns going at once. Where, like, I have to know that when you say Cheerios, I say Lucky Charms, and when you say banana, I say apple. So, like, I have all these different things going at the same time.
Wow.
And so you just work your mind in a way where that's another moment where you can't think of anything else, and you're getting good at remembering a pattern. So when you're doing it on stage, it can apply to a scene where you're like, this pattern that we've established where you say this kind of thing, I say this kind of thing, and then we keep that going, and that's, like, creating the game of the scene.
Right.
So these exercises that seem silly are really, like, just literal maps for what you're going to do in the show.
Well, I like that improv is spoken about in terms of play, like people play with each other.
Yeah.
And there are rules to the games, right?
Yeah.
Give me an example of a more odd rule. Like, are there games with very odd rules and the whole sense is, the whole idea is to create a different vibe on stage?
Yeah, I mean, I think like, when we're talking about exercises to warm up, there are games that can throw you off a little bit. Like, there's like a Beastie Boys rap game where you say the beginning of a Beastie Boys rap lyric and then you rhyme it with a word that doesn't rhyme. Like, you end it with a word that doesn't rhyme with the thing. So, you know, Beastie Boys have a very, like, literal, like, I went to the store to get some bread. And then you would
say, and then
like,
I have to go, and then I fell down and landed on my ass.
Yeah.
Oh, instead of
yeah,
my head.
Exactly. So it's like you're working your brain in a weird way where you're like, I want to make a rhyme, but I'm going to say something different. And so it's like that's a weird rule and a weird game that kind of gets you thinking in a way that's not common.
Have you had moments where your mind just goes blank on stage and that's just part of the deal?
Not anymore. I think at the beginning I would have that where I'm like, I'm just a deer in headlights for a second.
Really?
But that's really more like in class I would feel like that would happen to me. But now as I've done it for, you know, enough time, I feel like I'm like, nothing will throw me off that at this point, and that feels very safe. So I've created by like practicing and working on it for so long, it's like you create sort of like a net for you to fall on, which is just your brain, where you're like, I trust that I will have something to say by the time that person finishes talking. And I don't know what it's going to be. And that's great.
And you just have to trust that.
Yeah. There are times before I go out on stage where I'm like, what are we doing? We don't know what we're going to say. Like, I'll actually like, think about it like so like plainly, like, I don't know what this is. Like, I have like a moment of clarity that like what we're doing is insane. And then I'm like, okay, forget that, because I can't think about that. But like, right. It does hit you every once in a while. Like, this is very weird that I'm going to go out there and I don't know what I'm going to say and hope it's good.
If you went to Aruba for 6 months and sat on a beach by yourself and came back and that night went to do improv, would it be harder?
I think there is a little bit of like squeaky wheels when you take time off. Even like I was in London doing that movie for 4 months and like I didn't do improv that whole time. But that was kind of good for me because I do so much improv that I think I felt like it was like a nice breather. I never let myself have a break from it because there's no reason to when I'm in town and right. have, you know, my night free. I might as well go do it. But I kind of liked that reset button. And so when I came back, I was a little nervous to do my first shows. And like I have a podcast that's all improv based. And so I was a little bit like, okay, I hope this is good, but it's just all there at a certain point. Like, you can't lose it. It's like riding a bike.
I had Matt Walsh here, and he talked about sometimes you get in a rut where you feel like you can't create new characters. You've done everything.
Yeah.
And I would think when you started talking about being away for a while, you probably get out of that rut of it seems new to you. It's got to be new to you.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And I think I had kind of gotten a little bit burnt out right before that movie. So it was kind of good for me to have that break because I was getting to a point where I was feeling like, okay, this is kind of draining sometimes. Like, my podcast is an hour-long improv podcast.
Yeah, let's talk about that because yeah. I just discovered it recently.
Yeah.
And it's a full-on improv game.
Yeah. So it's this, the premise of the show, it's called With Special Guest Lauren Lapkus.
Right.
And the premise is that the guest is the host. So they come in and they know what they want the show to be about. They decide what my character is going to be. And they don't tell me anything in advance. And so we just start going. And
is that really true? You don't get any information?
I don't want to know. The people sometimes are like, wait, can I just tell you because I want to see if you've done it before? I'm like, I don't want you to tell me anything. Because it's so much more fun for me if I don't know what's about to happen.
And it's sort of absurdist humor, too.
And it is. It's very like anything can happen. We can say or do anything.
Well, I think it's fascinating. And one of the ones that just blew me away was the Thomas Middleditch one.
Oh, yeah. Thomas
and it was live, which I'm sure is different than doing it not live.
Yeah.
But I guess what I was curious about, because I don't know a lot of the names on there, is everyone you pick a real pro improv person themselves?
There are, for the most part, yes, but then I'll have people on who are stand-up comedians who don't really do improv, but they're great, I mean, because they're funny people who go on stage and talk by themselves, so they can definitely do what I'm asking of them. But for the most part, yeah, it's all like UCB friends who I know who are just really funny, and I feel safe in that.
Right.
It's really fun.
Have you ever done it with a rank amateur?
No, I actually haven't. I think there are people who are like actors who don't do improv, but there is so much natural ability in that because you've been acting. I'd be curious to have on like an improv student and see how it would go. I'll hold a contest if anyone's interested.
Well, I think we should try it and give people an idea.
Oh, you want to do it?
I want to try
it. This is great.
Because here's the thing. I don't think I really will understand that blank mind terror unless I'm in it.
Okay, good. So you can
The setup.
The setup will just be you. You could be yourself. You could be a character.
No, I need to be a name. I got to be a character.
Okay, so you can give yourself a character.
Okay.
And then we'll just talk.
All right. And how do we tap out?
You will know
I'll
when
know.
We're done.
Okay. All right. Welcome to the Dick Friendly Show. I'm your host, Dick Friendly, former corrections officer, and we're talking friendly.
Great.
And I'm here with my special guest who I first learned about at the North Dakota State Bird Calling Championships, where she swept the contest with her imitation of the mating call of the turkey vulture, which was just astonishing.
You're
to everyone.
You're too kind.
Well.
You're too kind.
And her name is Minerva Kuthatch.
Yes, it is.
And you've written a book, a memoir, actually. Confessions of a Bird Caller. So I'm just so happy to have you on.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here. You know, it's really exciting to talk to a person. I'm usually with birds all the time, so this feels new.
Now, do you have birds that talk to you?
Well, I hear them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
They're definitely saying stuff, you know, and it really moves me. I discovered this talent when I was little where I could just kind of talk to birds and it took off, you know, it made a whole career out of it.
But I was curious about your mother because she makes a lot of appearances.
Well, she's a piece of shit.
Well, that's what I wonder.
Yeah, I'd love to talk more about birds. I kind of hate her. So if we could just
move on from her. About why a memoir in the first place. You're so young.
Well, I've lived a lot of lives, you know. I really have.
Yeah,
I am 21.
Yeah.
But people say I look 50, you know.
Well, tell me when you did your first bird call?
I came out of the womb actually just screaming like a bird, and it is, it was documented actually.
Really?
Because doctors could not believe it. So it was kind of, it was incredible for everyone. They got a camera. They pulled it out. Someone was filming their actual child, you know, being born in the next room. But they grabbed that camera and just started filming me because that was so much more interesting.
You know, I saw some of that film, and your mother slapped you. And I thought at the time that was rather odd because the doctor's supposed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was your mother. And was that sort of the beginning of your relationship with your mom?
Yeah, it was the beginning of the end, you know. I hated her ever since. But
yeah.
I guess she wanted that, you know. She's a tough cookie. You know, and I feel like we're talking about her again too much. I'd love to talk about the birds if we could. I have a strong relationship with them, and it's all very positive.
Well, the reason I mention your mother so much is because your mother got you your first bird.
Okay, she did, yeah.
Yeah.
She did. She did get me a parakeet when I was little, and that was hugely important in my life.
Yeah.
It was my first friend.
And was that before the accident?
Yeah, we call it an accident, in quotes, definitely. You got that right.
Yeah.
Yeah, before the accident, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how that first parakeet and the accident sort of created this perfect storm of a 21-year-old bird calling champion?
Yeah, well, my mother told me to run away.
Yeah.
And I did. And so I went up a tree out in front. I didn't know where else to go. And of course, my parakeet followed because he's my BFF at the time.
Yeah,
and so we were in the tree together for a full week. And I made very close friends with everyone up in the tree. And it really just kind of set me on a path of pure bird life, you know. And the accident, so to speak, was when my mother came out with a saw and just cut me right down. She just couldn't take it because I was happy for once.
She cut down the tree.
Uh-huh, she cut it down. And I fell and I broke both of my legs.
Ah, that explains the the braces.
Yeah, and I've never taken them off, just as kind of like a shout out to her all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you get into competitive bird calling?
Well, that I kind of fell into it, and no pun intended. But I did end up, you know, I went to it was a local fair that we were having.
Yeah.
And they had a competition going, and they had birds running around just in little cages and things, and the goal of the competition was to try to imitate them spot on. So I did it. I did it. You want to hear one?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, this was the first call I ever did. So you can't judge me for it because I was a child.
And what bird are you imitating here?
It's a cockatiel.
A cockatiel.
Yeah.
Oh, now see, that is beautiful.
Yeah. Did you like that?
It's beautiful. And I think that's what really turned my head at the state championships was here was this, you know, let's be honest. Most of the bird callers, they're big, old, hairy men.
Well, I'm married to one of them.
And we'll get to him.
Yeah.
But there you were, this vision with your leg braces and your coonskin cap, which I don't know why you wear that when you do the bird calls.
I like to fit in, you know, just be kind of, make them think I'm a creature of some kind.
Yeah.
Kind of throws them off a little bit. But yeah, I met my husband there. It was kind of a Celine Dion sort of situation where he was my manager and then kind of became my lover. And I never looked back.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's I think the most nervous I've been on this show.
You were so great.
No,
I was thinking like you're doing great. I was thinking that during that like you were just so comfortable that I was like you're.
You kept negating my mother thing, and I thought we can make it funny that if I kept going to the mother, but I thought you might be mad at me.
No, no, it was perfect. You were doing exactly right. That was what I wanted you to do is keep talking to my mom, even though I didn't want to talk about her.
Right.
You picked up on everything.
Well, I guess you can't sit there and judge, right? You just have to be in it.
No, and I mean if I think about it too much, like I start to not perform well. So if I'm sitting there kind of thinking, you're not really doing it, then I'm losing my thing.
Or thinking like, oh, I have to make this funnier.
Right, yeah. And I mean, there are moments where that stress can kind of hit you because you're creating a product that will be listened to and can be revisited. It's not just like an improv show on stage. So there's a little more pressure to feel like I want it to be a solid piece. But at the same time, like I think what's fun about listening to it for people who can't go see an improv show in their town, it's fun to be able to hear the ups and downs of it and like to hear that there are moments that are a little flatter than others, but then it really pays off later.
Right.
And even like with editing it, because I have the ability to edit things out or cut things or rearrange, I don't really do that at all because I find that when, like, if we laid something out in a boring way or an unfunny way, that that I felt was like, well, this is really boring. It takes a really long time to get through this part. It's not that funny. But then later we reference it and it's a very funny moment. It's like, well, it's totally worth it to have that weird part. Like, I mean, if you're someone who's interested in improv and you listen to these podcasts, it's a great tool for learning. I wish that I had had this when I was in high school. Like, there are so many improv podcasts out there now that I'm like, that would have been so cool to have that, to be able to listen to improv shows anywhere I am and,
right,
like, and learn from these people. Like, Improv for Humans, Comedy Bang Bang, all these shows, like, would have been so great for me at that time. So I'm sure there are a lot of young people that really enjoy it. And it's really cool to get to do that. But I think that, like, you could hear, like, when you kind of go, like, yeah, you had to work with what you created. So if you set up something that isn't really working, you got to make it work. And then over time you do, and it ultimately will work, and it's going to be fine.
Right.
So it's a good lesson to kind of just let it go.
Is the audio-only format weird? Like, did you have to think about the fact that you can't do anything physical or visual and you have to describe things? Or does that actually make it more fun because you can describe things that aren't really there?
Yeah, that is really fun for me, to be a character that I can describe myself as anything, and you don't have to imagine it like when you're still looking at me. You know, there's something really great about just being like, I'm the size of a dollar bill, I do this or that. So I can whip around the room and I'm just screaming, and then you can imagine that I'm flying around. You know, it can be anything. And so that's really fun. And also there's an improv format called The Bat, which is done completely in the dark. And I always enjoyed that a lot.
Really?
And it really is just like a radio play or a podcast.
And you just turn the house lights off and...
Yeah, and it's all audio. So I think that was really a fun thing that I had done before in my life that kind of carried over into this format, where you can go like, okay, I have a little experience with doing an improv show in the dark, and that's right. What this is. So,
yeah. You know, you talk about everyone's doing improv and that it's become such a popular thing. And do you think that, could you change the format and keep the podcast, or do you feel like you're locked into this format?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because I have wanted to change it, but I get totally stuck with it because I think that I've established something that, you know, it is what it is. I don't know. It is kind of a tricky thing. Like, when I think about if I want to change it for myself to spice it up, I would probably have to start over, I think. Because
you have to create a new one.
Yeah.
And how is the live audience? Is it easier with a live audience?
It's good, but I sometimes find it more stressful.
Really?
It's a kind of a weird thing because I feel like I just find myself, like, sweating. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm like kind of, I can feel myself, like, working more. I think partly because you're just seated the whole time and you're not able to get up and be physical. I think, like, doing an improv show where I can just get up and do object work, it takes you out of your mind a little bit. So you're not going to just be thinking about the words you're saying. But when you're just sitting with a microphone, it's a little more intense. Like, it's just about us talking. So we have to go back and forth and keep it interesting. I mean, it's one reason why I really admire stand-ups, because I think that is such a pressure that they're putting on themselves to go out there and just talk, even if you've written it. It's still like, it's just you talking. You can't distract
exactly.
In any way. You just have to, like, deliver. So it's really impressive to me.
Okay, so I want to talk about The Characters,
yeah.
Which is your Netflix special that it came out a while ago.
Yeah.
For people who haven't seen it, you play a bunch of characters that sort of cross over into each other's worlds. One of them is a sort of a pop star meets a Kardashian meets like a Tampa trailer park.
Nailed it, yeah.
Woman. Yeah. And there's strippers, and there's crazy crack whore ex-wives, and there's even this guy Todd who's like a teenage dude. And what I got from it watching it was that your ability to observe people and kind of mine their idiosyncrasies and make them larger, like that is a skill, I think. And I just wondered if that, on the topic of building characters and making these people three-dimensional, if you were sort of always someone who observed people and like saw their quirks and sort of...
Yeah, that I think I just remembered something from middle school that definitely proves that was true. We went on a trip with some of my school to London and Scotland. It was like this cool trip we got to go on. And
to go to London and Scotland in middle school?
Yeah, it's totally disgusting.
We got to go to like the waste management plant to see how
we did that too.
How things are recycled.
Yeah, no, it was a special trip. It was very, very cool. But we went to London and we had this tour guide who was just this like ridiculous British guy. And I intimidated him the entire trip for my teachers. Like it was like this thing that I just wouldn't stop doing. I thought it was so funny to make fun of him. And I mean, it was. And I got an award at the end. We all got awards for like different reasons on the trip. You know, mine was
You got
like,
an award for imitating the tour guide.
Yes, yes.
And did the tour guide know you were imitating him?
I don't know. I don't know how good I was at being subtle. So right. I don't know if I was pulling it off. But that I remember that distinctly. And I used to do like Judge Judy impression back then. Like I had a few impressions I would do a lot when I was in middle school. And so thinking about it now, I'm like, yeah, I guess I really did like notice when someone had like a quirk or something and I could kind of do it.
Yeah.
And I still like love watching people for that reason. Like I can get as much out of like a person in line at Marshall's as like, you know, just some celebrity on a reality show or whatever. Like I find everyone really interesting. And there's so
and
there's
do you
so
find
much
yourself
there.
Doing that? Like,
yeah,
like standing
yeah.
there and
yeah, I mean, I still remember this one woman from a line that I was in at Marshall's where she was holding all of these bras and she was really angry because the line was taking forever, but she was just like sniveling to herself and like going crazy. And I was like, this person is amazing. Like they're just here, like they hate everything and I love them. Like it's just so awesome. I love watching people like freak out in their own little moment and they think no one can watch them or no one can see them or they think that like, it might affect change somehow if like what they're doing is like loud enough or something. Like it's not gonna work. And I find myself talking to them now in a way where I wish that I wouldn't sometimes, but I'm like, it's gonna be fine. You know, when I see someone like going crazy in the airport, you know, like, everyone stands up at the same time to board the plane, even though it's like just group one and like everyone's there standing and it's so annoying. And there was this woman just like trying to get through everyone and it just like drove me insane. And I was like, we're all gonna get there. And like then she's like, no, I know. And then it really throws people off when you talk to them. I mean, I probably shouldn't do it, but like people don't like to be called out for being insane. But then when they're being insane, it's like, you're crazy. You know that like we all are just standing here calmly and you're going like, I gotta get through and I'm not even group one, fuck. You know, it's like they're going crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, you're fine. We can all see you and you seem nuts. And I'm sorry to be the one to tell you that.
So you will actually call people out?
Well, I can't help it. I sometimes like, but that's kind of new. I think my like, I used to be really afraid of confrontation, and now I kind of enjoy it. So I kind of will like not be upset if I start a little something with someone.
But what if someone's standing next to you goes, you know, you're acting crazy, and you're calling out a total stranger,
yeah,
and
like,
we can
yeah,
all
I
see
know.
You.
We're all having fun here. I mean, we're just trying to get to our next destination. But yeah, I don't know. I think I can't help it sometimes when I see someone just going like. Just like being rude to everyone too. When I see people being rude, I really just have to go like, you don't have to talk to him like that. He's just trying to sell you your product, you know? Like people will be so rude to people at stores. It drives me crazy. I just think it's so sad. But I think people forget that everyone is a person and they all have a day and they're all dealing with something. And remembering that is, I remind myself of that all the time. Like when I get obsessed with something in my own life, I'm like, okay, everyone I'm talking to has like a problem. And it's not all about me. Like when you, like last night I did a workout class and the woman behind the counter was like really rude. She was just kind of like short with me and didn't want to deal with me. And I wanted to be like, what is her problem? Why, what am I doing? I didn't do anything to her. And then I was thinking like, maybe someone just like broke up with her. Like, I don't know.
Right.
So it reminds you that everyone is like going through something and that makes them more interesting. And that makes them not just a bitch. It's like, they're not a bitch. They're someone who had a bad day and they're having a hard time right now. And they have to stand here behind this counter and do this job they don't want to do. And it's not about you or anyone. They're not even seeing you. And so it's a good reminder to kind of go through your day with that.
You know, when you say that, I think of the week after 9/11 happened. And I was, you know, driving around my car, going where I needed to go. And you'd make eye contact with somebody, and you'd be like, "Hey." And,
wow! Yeah.
And it was this moment of like, you know, I'm not making eye contact because the guy's on his phone and he's not seen that the lights turned green or whatever.
Right.
Everyone did sort of have a universally shared scary, tragic experience together. After about a week, it was just like. You know.
No one cares. I mean, isn't it sad, though, that it takes something that huge to kind of let someone into your lane?
Yeah.
Like, people don't want to do that at all. It makes me insane.
Right.
I'm like, what are you, why won't you let me in? I let everyone in. I even if I'm late, it's like, it doesn't make a difference if one car goes there. And people are surprised when you, like, stop on a freeway and, like, let them go. I mean, but it shouldn't be. What are we all doing? We're
why
all
do
driving
these
insane.
Why do you have to fly a plane into a building to get someone to let you into their lane?
Seriously. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
No, but okay, so you see that person at the airport or you see that person at Marshall's with the bras. How do you then turn that from a collection of observations to, a character?
Well, actually, in my special, I have a character who's boarding a plane or boarding a bus and is completely unaware
right.
of
she's
everyone.
Right, she's got the neck pillow.
Yeah, and she's just knocking people over and doesn't care. And that was someone I literally saw. I saw a woman with a ticket in her mouth. I thought it was amazing. She was walking onto a plane. She had a ticket in her mouth, and she had a neck pillow on. She was all ready to go, and she was just cutting in front of everyone. And it was like, hold your ticket. Like, I just couldn't believe it. It was just amazing.
The ticket bothered you the most.
Well, it was like, what are you, why is it in your mouth? You're about to give it to that person, and it's all just, like, gross. And, and I just was like, you are in your own world. It's fascinating to me. And so I just literally wrote it down and then did it, because I was like, I just want to be that. I want to be someone who just doesn't care what anyone else thinks of me, and I can just knock into them, and I don't notice. And my wheelie bag is hitting everyone, and it doesn't matter because I can't hear them because I have headphones on. And so I have my own little world. And so I did that one. Like, that one's very much just like a literal, like, I saw her, and then I was her. And that was fun. But I sometimes will just take a little thing about somebody and like a voice or something that I think is fun. Like doing the Whitney Peeps, the kind of pop star voice. Like, I just love, like, sometimes they're like, so ridiculous. Like, why do you talk like that? Like, and there are people who talk like this, and that's how they talk. And it's like crazy. Like, your voice is not real. Like, I bet if we like massaged a little, you probably don't really talk like that, but it's like this affected tone that we're all kind of doing because it's like sexy or something. I find it really interesting. And so I wanted to just be a character that was like really vapid and really far gone from like reality. Even her own voice probably just isn't how she really talks. And so, yeah, just like putting on tons of makeup and like, I loved that look. It's
so you
so
start
fun.
With a voice and that sort of, you know, it's funny, your whole face changed when you did that voice too. Like I saw that character.
Yeah.
It's sort of amazing. We used to have someone that worked here that would, every single thing was a question.
Oh yeah, I love that. Nice to see you. How are you doing?
Yeah.
What's going on? And then it's also like, I drove here. It was so much traffic. I couldn't believe it. It was crazy. Like, wow. Tone it down.
Yeah.
But they
yeah.
don't hear themselves. I think I love hearing people's voices and trying to do different voices too. And that was like, I have another character, Pamela from Big Bear, who's like the trash, like kind of crackhead.
Pamela from Big Bear,
and
yeah.
And that was from a YouTube video I saw of people at a monster truck rally. And she just talked really crazy, and she couldn't believe it. And it was just, you saw the thing, and it was, everybody's going crazy, and we saw a big truck. And it's just like, wow, I've never heard someone talk like that. I want to be you. And so it's just exciting to get to try to do it. And like, yeah, so many of them just come from people that I've heard. Like, I have another character who, Big Sue, and I mean, I've just made her, she was really based on a reality star who has since passed away, so I don't even want to like reference her, but she was amazing. But her voice was very, it was just like, it's very raspy, and you talk like this, and it doesn't matter. Anything you say, you do whatever you want. I love pizza. I love pizza. It's round. I love a round pizza pie. That's what I eat. And so it's just like, but it's all about like her mouth. She had a really big mouth. And like when I got to do, I did that character on Comedy Bang Bang, and so I got to like be actually in character on the TV show. And so I made my lips like really big and really sad. And so then it kind of makes it like it all just comes. It's like, I love getting to actually wear the costume, since most of the time I never get to do that.
Right.
So getting to actually, like, all those characters from my character special were like podcasts, things I did on my podcast or other podcasts.
And you got to create
them. And I got
visually.
To like see the whole thing, and it was so fun.
Well, I read a review of the characters, and I think it was the AV Club, and they called your characters funny grotesques.
Oh, that's nice.
And I think grotesques, it's a thing. Like,
yeah.
But in a way, I think it's true. It's like a lot of those characters, I think the idea of it is that they don't know that they are not part of the normal human race,
yeah.
right? Like, it's the unself-awareness that makes those characters. I think that's the thing they all have in common. They're not self-aware enough to realize it. And I think I read that you said that at some point you learned with the character you had to fully commit to it.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you could talk about that a little bit in terms of what happens when you fully commit and how you know you're there. Like, what does that mean to fully commit?
It goes back to all of those improv games and trying to like let yourself be ugly or dumb or weird and not judge yourself, because it makes it so much better. If you see someone half-assing a character, it's not compelling. It doesn't, you don't believe it. You don't go with it. Like, I think when I see someone who like really inspires me, like someone like Amy Sedaris, who does like amazing character work and really disappears into the character, I can just be swept away by that. And I love it so much. And it just, it feels like you learn so much about who she is based on that, even though it's not her at all. It shows you so much about her humor and like what she finds interesting in the world and what stands out to her. Like, it gives you a sense of how someone sees the world, and that is really cool to me.
And do you think that there was a point early on when you were half-assing characters? And
I think it was just a matter of getting even deeper in it. Like, I think I might have thought I was full-assing it, but then I wasn't. Like, just out of self-consciousness or not even, maybe just not enough training, where you kind of can go like, oh, I can actually go so much further than I think I can go. I think that I'm doing 100%, but this is actually like 50. And so if I really get crazy with it and really say whatever I want and really let my body move however it wants to move in this character and not think about what I might look like, which will be ugly for all of them, that's great. Like, that's when I can really let it go. And like, right. So that's part of what keeps me going too, is feeling like I could always do better. And I think that's just what like pushes me in everything that I do. When I watch like any old acting that I've done, I'm like definitely do that better now. So it's fun to feel like you're growing.
God, it makes you wonder like how much more we're capable of than we even know it, right?
Because yeah.
That's the definition of art, is letting something come out of you without any filter at all and having to perform like at a moment's notice.
And it just happens. It's just like a confluence of so many different things in the moment, and you're suddenly like,
how did I know how to do that?
Yeah. But then you look at it and you go like, well, it's years of experience meets opportunity meets luck. You know, it really
right.
is like, it wouldn't happen the first time I ever got on stage. And I don't know when it'll happen next, but it is that feeling of like, I'm prepared for it if I'm there, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
There's something you said a minute ago that I wanted to come back to, that in your special, to fully commit, it was going to be ugly.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's a difference or a different standard or expectation for a male improv comic versus a female.
Yeah.
And if you feel like that's not what audiences want from a woman, whereas a man wouldn't think that. I mean, is there some thinking like that or some stigma attached to that?
There is, I think. I think it's kind of, I've had a little bit of a up and down path with it over my time doing improv, that like at the beginning I didn't care at all, and I would just be and that's probably my child mind still, like I was a teenager and it was like, whatever, I'll be as gross or weird and that's funny and I'm not afraid to be gross. I mean, that was more in line with who I was probably at the time. And then there was a period where it's like I'm growing up and I felt a little bit more aware of being gross on stage or just unattractive. And I think I went through a little bit of a thing with that, where I had to get over it a little bit and go back to just like what is fun for me, which is being whatever the moment calls for, you know? I had a little period of time where I was self-conscious about it, even when I was like enjoying improv and having fun with it, I was doing less of that.
And thinking of what that would mean
yeah,
for your career.
Yeah,
or something.
Just like how people perceive me, like, you know, like someone I have a crush on or something. It's like, it could be anything that can make you doubt that. But I got over it, and I find now that I'm like, I'm back to like over the years back completely to just like thinking that that's important, because it is like my sense of humor. I don't think it's important for every woman to be gross in comedy. Like, you don't, there are beautiful model type women who are hilarious, and that's wonderful, and they never look ugly, and that's great. They're hilarious, they're awesome, they're beautiful, they have everything going for them. And I hate them. I spiral out of control. But I feel like for me, my sense of humor really lies in the kind of seeing people that I think are messed up in some way and really honing in on that and like, you know, exaggerating it. And that's really where I find my true joy. So to squash that in myself would be stupid.
When you say that that's the thing that's closer to who you are as a child, I think that that is so poignant to think about us as creative filterless children that sort of naturally, organically go through life being, you know, being drawn towards things that just feel good and exciting.
Yeah.
And then all that sort of gets beaten out of you, and it's sort of, it's very nice that, you know, it sounds like you are aware of that enough to want to recapture it or to be aware of it.
Yeah, and I think that's part of being friends with improvisers, is that you're surrounded by people who are kind of always using their child mind in some way. And it keeps you going on that level. Like, I have so many friends who are willing to do that exact same thing. And it makes life more fun. And I look at it and I think like, wow, I would hate to get more serious as I get older. I want to be like a crazy old lady. Like, there's this woman I found on Instagram recently. Her name on Instagram is like Batty Winkle or something. It's something like that. I think that's right. And she's just this older, she's like a senior. She's like probably in her late 80s or something. And she dresses crazy, like awesome. Like, I want all of her clothes. Like, they're insane. Like, I would never wear them probably, but I'm like, I should, because she does. And I look at her and I'm like, I want to be that. I want to be like a crazy old lady who's like saying whatever and being funny, and my personality doesn't have to like die because I become like older. I want to just be able to be like the same throughout my whole life and just be that, like, that. There are so few old people like that that you yeah. meet where you're like, they're fucking nuts and they're amazing and they're creative and they're interesting and they haven't slowed down because they're keeping that part of themselves fresh. So they're not afraid.
There's so few old people that you can look at them and go, oh, I can still see the kind of kid you were.
Yeah. And it is really inspiring. What's cool about this woman, I read about her, and I mean, whatever, you can look her up, but she's like,
what's her name again?
Batty Winkle is like her Instagram. Yeah, I don't know what her real name is, but
she's blowing up right now.
She's blowing up. She has like millions of followers, but she's amazing. But her husband died, and I think she lost another relative or something, and so she was really depressed. And her granddaughter like had her dress up in like a fun outfit, like some crazy teenage sort of outfit, and took a picture of her. And then it became this thing that she was really into. And she like dyes her hair crazy colors and wears these crazy outfits, and she's got like Instagram sponsors, and she's like amazing. So I want to be like that.
You know what? I think that is a noble pursuit, and I hope you become that.
Thank you.
And maybe like in 30, 40 years, you'll come back on here and you'll be like Batty Winkle.
Yeah, I hope so. That'd be so awesome.
Well, it's been very nice to talk to you.
You too.
And honestly, very inspiring to see that how your brain works is directly related to, you know, wanting to stay youthful and stay young, and it's inspiring.
Thank you so much.
So thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Hey folks, that's our show for today. The question on my mind is, was Lauren just being nice, or do I really have improv skills? I'll take your answers off the air. But seriously, you have to check out Lauren Lapkus if you haven't seen her yet. I was bummed we didn't get to talk about HBO's Crashing, in which Lauren hilariously plays a wife and ex-wife to Pete Holmes. And if you haven't seen that series, you gotta check it out. Also, go to Netflix and watch Lauren's episode of The Characters. You'll never be able to see reality TV in the same way again. I also highly recommend YouTubing her and checking out her Wild Horses sketches and anything else she does. Or hey, if you live in Los Angeles, go see her live. She's often at Upright Citizens Brigade and also at Largo, so if you can snag a ticket to see one of her improv shows, do it. And right now, go subscribe to her podcast with special guest. It's hilarious and astounding. And if you haven't subscribed to this podcast yet, you gotta do that. And while you're there, leave us a rating. Anything over 4 stars is acceptable. Remember, subscriptions and ratings really help us out with the podcast. And if you want to see what this podcast sounds like, well, we're also a television show. You can check that out on DirecTV or on Netflix, or you can go straight to our website at offcamera.com and you could subscribe to our show. For less than $5 a month, you can watch all the off-camera you can handle. And it's a great way to deep dive into our archive and really get a sense of what off-camera is all about. So check that out. Check out our store. We have magazines, t-shirts, and other cool items. And that's a great way to support off camera. I want to take a minute and thank everyone that helps on this show, because it's truly a team effort. There's Crawford Shippey, Nathan Shields, Michaela Galvin, Laura Kemper, Amy Jones, Kara Johnson, Matt Davidson, and Justin Kennedy. We couldn't make the show without all those folks. And we obviously couldn't make the show without all of you. So thanks for listening. Tell all your friends about us. And if you have anything you want to tell me, here's my email address. I'm sam@offcamera.com. You can also find us on social media. I am Sam Jones on Twitter and Sam Jones Pictures on Instagram. And we are Off Camera Show at Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. So that's the details. Now, you gotta join us next week when I sit down with the brilliant actress, Holly Hunter.
Movie sets can be like extremely not sacred, and the actor is there to protect the unknown. And sometimes you're the only one doing it. And I remember one of the days for broadcast news, the craft service guy had just been on the set offering people like some kind of shrimp or stuffed crab. It was like stuffed crab, that it was like, wow, I'm trying to do something holy. And I could still smell the stuffed crab in the, and that made me weep.
Holly had an early career run of good fortune that most actors never experience, working with legendary directors on iconic films like Raising Arizona, The Piano, and one of my personal favorites, Broadcast News. I asked her about finding the confidence to play at such a high level so early on. It created some false illusions about the industry, especially for someone who considers a movie set to be a sacred place. I also asked her how she made me completely believe relationships that I never saw on screen in her two newest films, The Big Sick and Strange Weather. Holly is without doubt one of the most talented actresses of our time, one who can make anyone believe anything. Well, anyone but William Hurt. He's not buying it. See you next time, off camera.